This is Catherine McNamara, editor and publisher of Archipelago.org, an international journal of literature, the arts, culture, and politics. On April 1, 2006, Sarah Arvio read from Sono, her second book of poems, at Chapter's Literary Bookstore in Washington, D.C. We recorded the event. These 10 poems appear in Archipelago.org, Volume 10, the spring-summer issue of 2006.
I wrote this book in Rome, and when I had the Rome Prize. And, of course, I didn't know what I would write. And as it turned out, I absorbed a lot of what I was seeing into a story about myself. So Sono, of course, means I am in Italian. So this book is I Am. Traveling is the first poem in the book. I wrote some notes, so I'm going to read to you. This poem makes a joke about interior of a country being the interior of the self. An ostracon appears in it, which is the object which was used during the banishment ceremonies in ancient Greece. And the word means oyster shell, which is the original object that they used. The poem mentions that there are verbs to oyster and to ostrich. Those are actual verbs in the English language, which I use here. There's one phrase from Wallace Stevens, the poem at the end of the mind, a famous one. I've always thought it was wonderful that the inside of an oyster shell looks like a sky. I'd been ostracized, so I hid my head. And what was the view from under the sand? It was a view of the interior. It was an interior ostracism. It might have been a desert or a beach. What if I said the world was my ostrich, when I'd hoped to say it was my oyster? What special mussel did I like to eat? And what oyster was my sovereign world? Spin the globe to Africa or Austin. Was I a gawker? Was I a creeper? Was I a stilt man? Was I a sleeper? Was this my world? It might be the oysters. Having it all in the palm of the hand, or in the palm at the end of the mind. This was traveling and seeing the world. There were verbs. To oyster and to ostrich, sand of the desert and sand of the sea. Each had its beauty, each had its place. And yes, sand in the meat of the oyster. And yes, sand in the meat of my own mind. I gathered around it and made my pearl, as pure as something made of grit can be. This was Australia or Austerlitz. Here was an extravagant ostracon with the shell as the sky and the blue and pink stain as sunset and the rim, what else, as heaven. And this, lie in the desert a little longer or sleep on the beach, then leave your shells behind you in the sand. Shadows is the only poem in this book that comes in a way from the same material as my first book. Which is about a set of visitations. And here they're described as wings or thoughts. The sense one has, sometimes, of another presence. I start out with the memory of seeing the sheets drying in the wind outside the window. This is a childhood memory. And the sheets become pieces of paper on which the story of my life will be written. It's about starting in childhood and looking forward at the unwritten story of your life. I was very badly brought up, and the visitors that came to me with my poems were welcome friends. The phrase shadow vita, which occurs in this poem, is something that Ed Hirsch said to me. He said, everyone has a shadow resume, which is what you thought of doing in your life, you wished you had done, but you never did do, your shadow vita. I saw some shadows moving on the wall and heard a shuffle as of wings or thoughts. I rolled back the sheets and looked at the day. A raw, blown day, white papers in the street. Sheets were flapping in the sky of my mind. I smelled the wet sheets. I tasted a day in sheets hanging in the damp of a day. White pages flapping. My life had been so new when I didn't yet know how old it was. I couldn't see the vistas on those sheets, the dreamscapes sleeping deeply in those sheets. I hadn't yet seen my shadow, Vita, or learned which host would trick me or treat me, which of my hosts would give me something sweet, some good counsel, and a soft place to sleep, or what was the name of my ghostwriter? Who ghosted my life? Whose dream would I ghost? Who wrote my name and date across those sheets? And which sheets would be the wings of my thoughts? And which would hold the words of my angels? A host. And did I know I'd have a host? No, a line of sheets is never a bed. A gaggle of hosts is never a love. A host is never as good as a home. A ghost as good as a dog or a god. But I had my heart, always had my heart, for God in a home, as much as it hurt. Thesaurus. This poem has an odd interior rhyme, which is forest of, thesaurus of. And the poem speaks of nomenclature, which is, you know, classification by hierarchy. It plays on the phrase, you can't see the forest for the trees. It's about being or becoming, about the question of who am I and the presence of life inside me in relation to the presence of life in the world. Thesaurus. Given away, would I be this? Given this thing, would I be this? I never knew how persons could be things, and yet we were in the vast cosmic thing. We were little things. There were greater animations than ourselves, and to them we were things. This was a thought in the forest of thesaurus of my nomenclature. How often had I thought, am I alive or am I dead? Never knowing what either thingness was. These were the woods we were talking about. These were the words we were talking about. Where the forest was always in the trees. Where what I saw was always what I was. My words, some leaves, all bristling with my life. Animate and aimé. All that was all. There was an aura. Call it a halo. Call it the glow of the moment of grace. There was something oracular and old. There was the show and glow. There was hello. There was yes, no. There was congenial and genial and joy. There was genius, a genie in the bottle, breath in the lungs. There was more than just being as I was. Wind in the woods, a forest in my mind. The mind of my life found in the forest. The thing being named my thing as it was. I hope you'll laugh if you hear something that's funny. I hope there's something funny in those poems, even though, of course, they are also about states of other than laughter. This poem is called Grace. It's about the struggle between the idea of a platonic place and life on Earth here, on this particular planet. So I have one line: the planet versus Platonism. I'm searching around in myself, asking, am I an awful monster or a grace of the three graces? And Cerberus appears here, the dog with three heads, guarding mouth of hell. I've been down to Sperlonga, which is south of Naples, and seen the extraordinary statue that had been dragged out of the sea with the three ferocious heads of dogs. So there's this play of plurality and threeness, and the three graces appear in here. And the line, graceful Cerberus, Cerberian grace, I hope makes you imagine sweet dogs or snarling graces. Grace. Somewhere over in the Platonic place, where I was enshrined in my high ideal, was there a pure depiction of myself written in water or else on the wall? A plural entity named for my grief or named for my excursions into joy? Some Cerberus or trio of graces gracing my life with a howl or a dance? Some triangle of me, myself, and I, an altar to an alternating self, alone, alert, beside the aqueduct, an allusion to the trope of Sarah, aleatory emblem of my all, as winds spit rain through the ancient arches and cloud faces gleamed in the dark-lit sky. There was now and then, there was yes and no, there was gracious, and there was also grave. But was there a place for my gravity, where the wall and the wind were in myself, or a continuum of my own self, graceful Cerberus, Cerberian grace, gravitating toward the heart of a want, a place to create what I long to be, or the planet versus Platonism, all the faces of my envisaged self, engraved with weather, my wish, and my will, gravid with luminous intensity. I'm hoping that the high tone is also has some irony. It's not purely overblown. Grief. This poem laughs about the grandiosity of grief. You know how your grief can just seem bigger than the universe? And it says, the little griefs are the measure of our lives. At the end, there are a group of forces. It's all right. Artistic and spiritual forces at the end. The daemon, which is the Greek spirit that moves within. Duende, which comes to us from Lorca, and also is that wind of inspiration, duende. Dada, the artistic movement being celebrated down the street. And the same reference to God and dog, which appeared in shadows also. Grief. So, was there something grand in all this grief? Oh, I should say that centurions are officers that led legions of 100 soldiers in ancient Rome. Grief. So was there something grand in all this grief? Some grand canyon or great cathedral vault? Some grand arcades and avenues and walls ringing with echoes? Hello and goodbye. The hoofs of centaurs and centurions. The little griefs were the gauge of our lives. The glass of water waiting to be drunk. The stick of wood waiting to be knocked. A sliver of glass. A splinter of wood. Luck, luck. It was always the same lament. What I never got and what I gave. What I never gave. And what I got, I had always wanted to grace myself with a garden growing before my eyes, a riot of grandeur and abandon. If you want a big thing, oh, take a grave. If you want a grand thing, oh, take a life. Try out a garden. Try out a grave. Ha, 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 ha. There was the big guffaw. 100 halos and 100 hells. A great load of guff and a lot of gall. There was Dada. There was Dionysus. Damon. Dwendy. A darling or a dog. God and love. Or a horse or a hope. There we were, gaga at all forms of God. There was godliness, and there was a dog, yipping at my heels, yippee, oh yippee. I read in Santa Cruz recently to a classroom, and that they were studying some of my poems, and one of the young women told me that her favorite poem was Hope, and the line that she liked best is that hip-swinging hallelujah of hope. And this poem, I realize that this poem is a young poem. It's about, I grew up in the 1960s, and we were hip, and we smoked hashish, and we, you know, breathed the helium out of balloons, and then, you know, breathed it back out while talking to distort your voice. And we also went into supermarkets and breathed the gas out of the whipped cream cans. So, anyway. So I visited San Lorenzo Fuori le Mura, which is a church to St. Lawrence, and there were some statues there of some lionesses with a lamb in her maw. And I think the poem is about hoping at this stage in life that I still have some of what I thought life was when I was breathing in helium. Hope. I said this, would you give me back my hope if I suffered hard enough, if I tried? That hip-swinging hallelujah of hope. That hip, hip, hooray we were talking about, ring outward from the hip or the heart. Holistic, holy, these were all high things, hyper-radical and hyper-real, that gospel of helix and radiance. Hail me, here I am alive, falling from the lips of the lioness, lambent and loved, gambling like a lamb, having gambled all my griefs and lost them. Game of the gods, gammon of the cards, inhaler of hashish and helium. Here was the hub of the halo again. The hub or nub of the halo or heart. And the trope of turning to say hello. We always said it, helio, hello. Hello to the little girl and lambkin. Garrulous, hilarious, all grown up, nibbling on nothing and feeling okay, and sweetly holding hands with the harpist, turning toward the sun, turning toward the sound, my warp of the world, my harp of the heart, sounding like myself, as I always sound, snappy and stylish and too sonorous, a little savage, and a little sweet. Veronica Vera Icon means true image. It was a Saint Veronica. The name comes from a woman who apparently accompanied Christ to Calvary, and she handed her handkerchief to Christ, and he wiped his face with it, and the handkerchief was forever imprinted with his face. So that's the true image of Christ. So, a Veronica is a great sweep of the cape in bullfighting also. And this poem is about envy and and a response to envy. It has a line from Federico Garcia Lorca also. Te quiero verde, which means I want you green. And that's the green of, you know, the green of purity. There's this other green in here, the green of envy. Verismo is a period of Italian painting, late 19th century. It means, you know, verismo is, means trueness, realism, kind of realism. Verismo. And Isis, I'm sure you know, is the Egyptian goddess. Okay, here we go. Via Veneto also is a very stylish street in Rome. Vera Icon. I was walking on Via Veneto. Va va voom, he said, and I laughed out loud. It was all in the verve of the gesture. I was a green-eyed blonde. I was a girl. Vainglory, will you give me some of it? Garrulous, God-struck, full of vinegar. This might have been a visionary stance, a revision of Isis and Venus, reversion to a vision of grandeur, or desire in a raw and vital state, another variant of verismo, and as vivid as a green valentine. Viva, some green blood running in my veins. Te quiero verde, I want you green, which didn't mean I want you virtuous, if virtue meant veiling your truer thoughts. Or maybe virtue was Veronica, an adventure in the vernacular, passing her handkerchief, tossing her cape. One was a swinger, one was a saint, one was devoid of all vanity, and one was standing in the path of the bull. It was all in the quest for victory. There was vanitas, there was veritas. I hoped I had both guts and godliness. Some of us had more, and some had less. This was the true truth we were green about. Trauma. Trauma is about therapy. It has the expression talking trash in it. I'm sure you know what that means. A lot of blah, blah, blah. And it comes to the conclusion that you go through years of therapy, and what you come up with is truisms. Like, my mother should have treated me better. And when mothers are bad to their children are unhappy. Stuff like that. It's a truism. It's like a big revelation, maybe. But it's a commonplace at the same time. Trauma. I was trammeled, I thought, by tragedy. Oh, what? Something long ago. Some travail of my soul or my body or of both. The little tragedies of daily life, tremoring through me. Tremor wasn't a verb. Tra-la-la wasn't either, or trial. Though they trailed through my life, didn't they? A tracery of tears, a track of woes. Woes, woes, 10 little fingers and toes. Decades of them. This deed, that distortion. A tort against the treasured harmony. A twist or a twirl, a tick, a tic-tac-toe, thrumming on the synapses, drumming out a threnody of threats and tears, a thought torture, love, love, a tiny tortured heart, my own little tap-tapping heart, my tapped-out heart, their testament to me, a test of wills, or a test of my will, my willingness, my wish to weather on. Oh, waves, waves, all the ripples and rhythms, the rituals of walking and reaching, the verbiage, the verb thoughts, try this, try that, the rites of therapy and talking trash, the tapestry of tears, the truth trapeze. But did I want the truth? Try me, I said. This is, this was, this should never have been. Reason. Thought, treason, and some truisms. Sistine Chapel, the poem is called Sistine. It comes from a kind of confluence between the word crisis and the word Sistine, both have sis in them. And toward the end of the poem, there's the expression, "Oh, cry, sister." I've been to the cave of the Sibyl of Cuma, the Cumaean Sibyl. Now, she refused to have a love tryst with Apollo. And Apollo gave her her wish, which was eternal life, but did not give her eternal youth. So therefore, she's shriveled up. And she, in this poem, she's shriveled in her cage. Savonarola, the Florentine zealot who was burned at the stake for heresy, appears in this poem. And the poem says that if you think you have it so bad, go hang out with Savonarola. On the Sistine ceiling, the most famous image from it is God reaching his hand out and touching the finger of Adam, just creating Adam. And the poem says, points out the fact that Sibyl is just below, on the ceiling just below, and God could just as well be pointing toward the Sibyl. Sistine. I was moving from crisis to crisis all through my life, with a few calm days between them, like a caress or a charm, descending unexpected from above. Up there, God's hand was pointing toward Adam, when it could be turning toward the Sibyl. Who cared for love when there was wisdom? All that stuff in my satchel full of scrolls, a chrysanthemum or a chrysalid, for crying out loud, wasn't that enough? Crystallizing the future as an eye, lifting up the future as an eyelid, always gazing with a critical eye. But how sad not to have loved the sun god, when he might have given me all I wished. What was so bad about a night of sex? Here I was, hanging shriveled in my cage, saying I want to die, want to be dead. Oh, cry, sister, or else just suck it up, or spend some time with Savonarola. Maybe it was just those sulfuric fumes rising from deep in the Stygian swamp that caused my sad moment of misjudgment, when all the while a mere stanza or two might have saved the day, saying, I love you, eternities ago, or maybe not. Or was there still time for some kiss and tell, or some scissoring schism of the heart? Come down to Cuma and open my cage. Sad, I had forever, but not a kiss. This last poem has almost no reference to the classical world. Just two words from Italian, canti and canzoni, which are forms of song. This poem is called Song, and it plays on the sound oi. It has Mina Loy and Myrna Loy, the poet and the actress, and Terry Malloy, who Marlon Brando plays in On the Waterfront, and he's in love with Eve Marie Saint, who a blonde I wished to be. And there are Rob Roys in here. Rob Roys are a drink that people don't drink anymore. A song. I said I couldn't love, and it was true, not a ploy or coy. I couldn't love or sing, not canti or canzoni or chants or airs, not. I could do sex, but not without love, and I couldn't love, so I couldn't do sex. Oi, oi, as the Jews say, no love and no song. That means no joy. Happiness, you once said, is not a goal. It's a happenstance. It happens to some and not to others. It may have happened sometime to Mina Loy or to Myrna or to Terry Malloy, but not to me. Life without love is life without love. As dry as a stick. It's sick, though saying so, my love, is cloying. It's not worth a stick. La, la. I sometimes almost broke into song. A broken song, could you call it that? We were drinking Rob Roy's. Those were the nights. I had inner singing and inner love, but not for me, not for you. I had love for a boy I once knew, but not for you. Never a loyal and unalloyed joy. This was my stance, and maybe my stanza, and this was the substance of my romance. I never could love. Now I was oily, ogling their pants, their hearts, and their hairlines. Oh, how annoying. A blonde with no bow, an old girl with no toy and no ally. Oh, boy, boy, I know I broke your heart with my broken song. I know I was wrong. Thank you.